Welcome back to the Digital Die Podcast, a conversation about tech. My name is Darsh. I am one of your hosts.
My name is Jacqueline. I'm your other host. In this week's episode, we're talking all about the latest Apple event where they unveiled the iPhone 13, 13 Pro, iPad mini, and Apple Watch 7. But it's not going to be like a recap. We want to make it more interesting. So we're going to give our thoughts about it and kind of have a conversation about where Apple's going. And then we'll close off this episode with our first impressions of the new Ray-Ban Stories in collaboration with Facebook.
If you like what you hear this episode, make sure to hit the follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and make sure you get notified of every episode that we put out, and it also helps us get the show to more people. We really appreciate it. Roll the intro.
iPhone 13 and 13 Pro. I think that we just start out here by giving Apple major props for the cinematography at this event.
Oh my goodness.
The first minute. FPV drones, like the works.
It was absolutely incredible. That event was genuinely fun to watch. I remember I was just sitting outside with my roommates. Everyone was just in and out, and I was just sitting there like watching my laptop open, just like mouth to the floor. I was so impressed with how they did it. And Apple, especially through quarantine, they've been putting out some amazing content when it comes to their events. Like, it's actually really entertaining. I feel like it's somewhat actually better than that of their live events that they used to do.
There's something about the live event, like the atmosphere of the crowd, which I miss, but in terms of just like straight up production value and pacing, it's definitely a lot better.
Absolutely. Well, okay, let's just jump into it. When it comes to the iPhone 13, Jacqueline, what were your thoughts on like the normal 13 this year?
Okay, so they announced 13 and 13 mini, which I had just made a video on the 12 mini, basically saying like, hey, it did not really sell that well. Beginning of this year, Apple changed 2 million units of the iPhone 12 mini to iPhone 12 Pros. Like they halted production on 2 million units. So I was kind of surprised that they came out with a 13 mini again. That said, one of the major issues with the 12 mini last year was battery life, and Apple is reporting that you're going to get an extra hour and a half with the 13 mini. So maybe that will move the needle for people.
That's actually not bad.
Right? Maybe. But it's still expensive at $699. The regular 13 is only a little bit more expensive than that. They have very similar features. It's definitely like a very iterative update. Like there is nothing major. The main things are display, brighter 1000 display, and some camera improvements as well.
Oh, don't forget that 20% smaller notch. That was something I was really excited about. I thought it was going to be a lot smaller, but even I feel like the renders and the pictures that they put out don't actually do it justice yet. I feel like when we see it in person, that's when it's going to be like, wow.
Totally.
You look at your phone how many times a day? So when you pull out your phone, you're looking at it, you're looking at the notch, for instance, like you probably are going to notice bigger display and a smaller notch, I feel like, in a heartbeat. The same way they said with the Apple Watch Series 7 that they have increased the screen display so it's more edge to edge with a 1.7 millimeter border. In that same respect, I feel like that would be an instant, like you just catch your eye, this would be the same thing.
Because we're so used to the notch now, like a lot of people don't, I guess, like care that much about having a smaller notch, like they just want no notch. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be like a thing that people actually notice. That said, I did see a render of like the old iPhone with the new iPhone, and it looks like the notch is slightly taller. So although they decreased the width of it, it looks like the height is slightly increased.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Maybe that's just the renders and how they look, but I'm optimistic. I think it'll look cool. One of the things actually with the iPhone 13 that really stood out to me that I thought was really cool was the new colors. So they have pink, blue, midnight, starlight, and product red. I'm in love with the blues this year. Like last year, I thought the blues were nice. This year, they're even nicer. They're like pastel almost. They look so, so good.
I was a bit disappointed that the pink like didn't look more pink though.
That's fair. It depends. Like, would you expect Apple to put out a hot pink iPhone?
I wouldn't expect it, but I would be down for it. Like, I'm going to send you a picture of what I wanted to look like for podcast listeners. We'll tweet this from our Twitter account if you want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the blue color on the Pro. I think that's my favorite color that they did this year.
Okay, wait, so I see this pink that you sent me. I actually wouldn't mind that. I'll be pretty honest with you. I'm a little flamboyant with the colors of my phones. So my current phone's a nice bright yellow. And I feel like if this pink was out there, like I would do it. I'd probably get a pink iPhone. Oh my God, the pink Pro? Yeah, I would do that. That I would do in a heartbeat. That looks so sick.
We'll have to post this from our Twitter, but yeah, it just looks so cool. The current pink is nice and I'm glad that they're doing a pink one, but yeah, it's definitely like a cream pink.
Very, very fair. It'd be really, really cool if for the podcast sake, like you pick up a pink iPhone, I pick up a blue iPhone.
Oh my God, yeah.
Then we got like the podcast colors and iPhones.
That'd be so sick.
But no, like literally this pink looks phenomenal, but even then like the Sierra Blue actually struck out to me. Like I was like, this is like on the Pro especially, like that's the one I'm picking up. Sierra Blue iPhone 13 Pro this Friday, because we're recording this on the Wednesday. This Friday, I'm picking it up. I have to. It looks so, so good.
Yeah, dude, the Pro always gets like less fun colors. Like it's gold, white, space gray, but I think it actually got the best color, which is the sky blue. that look just looks so freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas the 13 always gets a lot of more colorful colors, but I actually think all the colors on the regular 13 are like worse than that really nice blue on the Pro. It looks so nice.
So here's my issue, and here's something that I was thinking about a lot yesterday when they launched the phones themselves. When they talk about a Pro, what do they mean by a prosumer, like a pro consumer? Like, what does that mean to them? Because from everything that they added this year with the iPhone 13 Pro, it's a lot more like creative-based features than it is just general professionals game, if that makes any sense. The iPhone 13 Pro, the biggest increases that they made was, for one, the display, of course. And then for two is the cameras. The cameras are completely different this year than the iPhone 13. So there's actually like a difference to get the 13 Pro. The cameras are so good that they're like framing it, and they've been trying to sell it to everyone as hypothetically something that you could use to make movies. With that in mind, when they say pro, do they mean pro like creatives? Do they mean pro as in business people? Like, do they mean pro as in doctors? Like, what does that necessarily entail?
Totally. And honestly, like the Apple event, they show like a bunch of different videos shot on the 13 Pro by like really famous directors.
Mm-hmm.
They look good, but that's like the best condition possible, right? Like, they're obviously only going to show the best examples they could possibly get. And some of the examples were not that amazing. There was some focus jumping. It didn't look like super sharp in certain examples. So maybe I'm expecting too much from a smartphone sensor, but it can only do so much, even in the best conditions.
No, I 100% agree. And that was one of the things they were showing. So one of the cool features they introduced this year with the cameras on both the 13 and the 13 Pro was cinematic mode, meaning like rack focus, right? And so rack focus, kind of pulling focus from your foreground subject to your background subject, and you'd be going back and forth. The way that the phone works, it uses like intelligence, like machine learning and some AI and based protocols to kind of do that for you automatically. And then you can adjust it after the fact, but then I'll try to do it for you during the video. It's smart, but it is still all intelligence based. It's not actually done by the cameras. It's done all through software. For one, anything that Apple puts out is shot on iPhone with like a ton of different like gimbals and lighting and sound and all this other stuff. But the way that they presented it, there was blurriness. It was like a little grainy, probably because a lot of it was shot in like low light. But I guess that was a testament to its low light capabilities, because it wasn't that much of an issue, because like it is us being nitpicky.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. Like for a smartphone, it's amazing. It's just like they were kind of pitching it a little bit differently. Oh, like this is like you could shoot a professional movie on it. And honestly, like if you're shooting a professional movie and you have all like the lights and stuff that they had to make it look that good, then you probably are not shooting it on an iPhone.
That's something I want to test out. So if everyone listening, if you guys know, I have a channel called Capital Reviews. I'm hosting it. And one of the video ideas I was thinking of was potentially doing like making a movie or trying to make a short film with the iPhone 13 Pro. So if that's something that you guys are interested in seeing and seeing how I could do it, someone who's like an amateur videographer trying to put something like that together, like let me know. That I think that could be a really fun project. And if I feel like if you guys would enjoy it, I'd definitely be down to do it.
Yeah, dude, I was thinking about doing something like that on the channel, but I just can't figure out like what the content of the video would be. What's the story that I'd be shooting on the phone? Like, what would you shoot?
That's the thing. I would have to like write a short film. Like, I have a couple friends in film programs, and so I'd probably reach out to them and discuss with them the opportunity to like run a short film and have them help work with me to do it. And then we'd be using the iPhone camera to put it together. And then we'd see what the result would be. And then we can do like a behind the scenes showing how we're doing it. And then the end show the full product. Kind of like the TMS guys, like what they do.
I would actually definitely watch that.
It could be a cool thing. I don't know. Maybe we'll put that in for next week.
Yeah, dude, I would love to see that. I think like there is a lot of potential. There has never been a better time to be someone that needs to shoot videos on your phone.
Think about it. Like, we're in this age of influencer culture. Like, if you can make videos that look really professional on your phone and you're an amateur or someone who wants to go into the influencer game, like wants to become a creative, it's actually really opening, because you just buy a phone and then you don't have to buy a new camera. You just use that phone for the first bit until you can start actually affording that camera. And it puts you like one step further, whereas like a lot of other phones wouldn't be able to get you there.
And like for things like TikTok, most of that content is shot on the phone. So having like higher quality phone video will be huge for like user generated content as well.
Plus video bokeh too, like adds a whole new level of professionalism in each of their videos.
While still looking amateur.
Yeah.
Right? Like with user generated content, it's important that it looks like a person shot it versus like a production crew.
Yeah.
So you add like good stuff while still looking pretty amateur.
The iPhone 13 is going to be a very fun device, I think, for like a lot of reviewers and a lot of people who want to check it out. Cause like it may be an incremental upgrade this year, but in terms of like what they're offering, in terms of all the new features that they're bringing, I'm excited to check it out, especially the camera. And I'm never excited to check out cameras.
Some of the features that were really impressive, or really interesting rather, cinematic mode, basically focus racking. Mm-hmm. So like you can go from one area of focus to another, ProRes 4K video, except if you get the 128 gigabyte option, it does not allow you to do 4K ProRes, which is kind of weird.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my good. Okay, so I have to buy a 256 then, because I want to do 4K ProRes. I want to try that.
Yeah, so fact check me, but I'm 99% positive that Apple either is confident that it's just going to take up too much space, or the 128 gigabyte storage just isn't configured to allow for that. But basically, like, you can't buy that if you want the 4K ProRes.
Damn, that's absurd. Actually, it makes sense on the storage front, which is also another interesting thing they did this year. They introduced a 1 terabyte storage option. It's a top tier one. So it starts at 128, 256, 512, and then 1 terabyte. So you can definitely get a lot of storage on here. And if you're going to use this for film, the storage will be very, very beneficial to have.
What do you think about the fact that the 13 still only has like the 2 cameras versus the Pro?
I think that's pretty okay. A lot of my friends at least don't use a telephoto lens very often on their phone because they don't see the use of it. But like an ultra wide makes a lot more sense in terms of versatility's sake. I'm not too surprised here. I am a bit surprised that the cameras are different this year though. Like they'd made a huge emphasis on the fact that like this is a Pro camera this year on the Pro model. That was something I was very happy about. But what about you? Like what are your thoughts on that?
It makes sense to me because they have to differentiate the models a little bit. The 13 and 13 Pro are so close in features now that they're probably gonna cannibalize on the sales of the Pro a bit for the 13. So it makes sense to create some differences. Like another one is ProMotion, which is a high refresh rate display finally on the 13 Pro and 13 Pro Max.
I literally tweeted out like, yes, ProMotion. I was so excited. I was so happy too. I literally yelled in my apartment. My roommate's like, what are you doing, bro?
What do you think about them not including it on the regular 13?
I think that makes sense.
Okay.
A 120 hertz display is only noticeable to people who actually have like the eye for it, I feel like you'll notice it implicitly, but like you won't notice a big change if you've never experienced it before, or if you don't really care to experience it. And it's also gonna be ProMotion, so it's not even gonna be on all the time. So you're not even gonna see it 90% of the time until you absolutely need it. I'm not too surprised they didn't put it on the normal one, and it also makes the Pro phone feel more Pro because now you have ProMotion.
Totally.
It's a whole branding thing.
Obviously, I'm not gonna do it right now with COVID because I don't wanna give my phone to a bunch of random people, but I think a kind of cool experiment would be to give consumers like a 13 and then a 13 Pro and see if they notice a difference.
That's a good video idea. Thanks, Jacqueline.
Dude, if you do it, I definitely would be keen to see the results because I honestly do think that people would notice it subconsciously, but I don't know if they'd be able to like place what's causing them to notice something.
That's the thing, like even ProMotion on my iPad, like I notice when it's off when I'm like using the pencil, but otherwise I don't actually notice when ProMotion is on for the most part. Like I've just gotten used to it. So I wouldn't be surprised if moving down the line, people wouldn't notice it. But it'd be cool to see, like, give someone an iPhone 13, iPhone 13 Pro, be like, do you notice anything in your screen that's different, that makes a difference to you in terms of, like, its use case?
Another screen difference this year is actually with the Apple Watch 7. The Apple Watch 7 was announced yesterday as well. There's no release date yet, just it says coming in the fall. But the major difference with that is the display is bigger, thinner bezels, and it curves a little bit. So let's talk a little bit about the Apple Watch 7, because a lot of people were speculating that we were going to get a major update, squared off edges update, and it just was not that.
Honestly, I would have loved to see that. And I was like crossing my fingers as they were showing like the reveal video of what the new product was going to look like. Honestly, I was underwhelmed. Genuinely underwhelmed with the Apple Watch Series 7 this year. Just based on like, if anyone has listened to our previous episodes about Apple rumor roundups, like when it comes to the Apple Watch, we were expecting the world and they gave us a penny. They give us just something to keep us happy. Like, here's a dollar. Or like, if you're in Canada, here's a loonie. Like, just take it and move on.
It kind of further reinforces the idea that Apple is moving towards being a software-based company that also sells hardware. Half of the presentation was focused on like subscriptions that they have now, like Fitness Plus, Apple TV.
Apple One.
Yeah, which means like you can be a little bit more iterative with your updates. Like, you don't need to change the game every year you come out with hardware because you're only selling the hardware so people use the software.
Exactly. And then the software updates also upgrade features. So you'll see these features and be like, okay, like, I don't need to upgrade, but I need to get the new OS. Like, that's a huge thing.
Totally. Yeah. And also, like, it kind of is hard to change the game every single year. Like, I think that the next major hardware thing we're going to get from them is smart glasses. That's a brand new product category. Like, they're able to create a lot of innovation when they move to a brand new product category, like the AirPods or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard to, like, change the game every year with a phone when you also want to make sure that it's a good product with no sacrifices because you want people to buy it and buy the software. So, like, you couldn't do, like, a foldable phone because it has a lot of sacrifices. And they're trying to play it a little bit more safe so it's liked by everyone.
Exactly. But I mean, like, this doesn't mean that there aren't a couple of upgrades this year that aren't worth noting. Like, there were a couple of things that were great to see. So for one, they bring down the edges on the display, like the bezel, to down to 1.7 millimeters, giving it like 20% more screen real estate than the Series 6 and 50% more screen real estate than the Series 3, which is a huge thing there. They also have like the new 18 hours of battery life, as well as being able to charge it faster. I believe it's like 33% faster than previous iterations. Seeing stuff like that is very cool, but I really wish I did see the redesign on that front, because that would have been really, really cool to see.
I mean, the thing, honestly, that got the biggest redesign is iPad mini. Damn. iPad mini got a huge aesthetic difference. It literally looks like a miniature iPad Air now, or a miniature iPad Pro.
Yeah, honestly, considering all of our rumors that we did in the past couple of episodes, I think we were pretty spot on, or at least John Prosser was.
Yeah.
It was definitely a very big upgrade this year, and there was a lot to talk about there. So you know what, actually, I think we're going to end up taking a break real quick, grab a coffee so we can go at this with full enthusiasm. Before we do that, I want to let you guys all know, we set a goal for this podcast to hit 150 ratings on Apple Podcasts before the end of the year. If we hit this goal, we will be doing a live chat with Digital Dive listeners to answer questions and to celebrate. So help us hit this goal by rating us now while we take this quick break to grab a cold brew or a nice shot of espresso. I'm actually currently thinking about going to grab a cold brew. And when we come back, we're going to talk a lot more about the iPad mini as well as Ray-Ban stories. Be right back.
Jumping right back into iPad mini, let's talk a little bit more about the aesthetic change and then also the other iPads that Apple announced, because there was more than one iPad announcement.
Oh yeah, exactly. So for everyone who didn't watch the event or who doesn't know what we're talking about, the iPad mini this year got a huge visual overhaul. It's now actually looking more so like a mini version of the iPad Air, which was a very needed update. That was something that we've been looking for and waiting on for a very long time. So it was great to see it here. So pretty much you have the squared off edges, full aluminum back now that's going to be in multiple different colors. This year we have purple, pink, starlight, which is like this goldish silver, which is also what you got on the normal iPhone 13, as well as space gray. But one of the coolest things is they went up from like a 7-inch display to an 8.3-inch display without actually compromising on the size of the device itself, which was a huge, huge increase just because of the ability to shrink down the bezels and give it that full display, which is a really great addition there.
Totally agree. Even just not only for the fact that it adds screen real estate, but also it just looks a lot more futuristic.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the coolest things about it. Like, it actually looks really cool because it's a tiny little tablet now. Like, it's something that they were at least advertising something you could fit in your back pocket almost, at least if you have a big back pocket. I think it's actually pretty cool. Like, so you're getting like USB-C this year. It's 5G compatible. Actually, I didn't know about this with the iPad updates from last year, but center stage is a thing this year, or it was in previous years, but now it's available on the iPad mini. Center stage I thought was actually a really cool feature, especially for kids who are doing school remotely and doing school from home. Like, that could actually be very beneficial for them because they'd be able to actually adjust the shot based on what they're doing. So if they want to move to like a whiteboard, or even if it's a teacher, like flip the script, if they wanted to go and present to a whiteboard and they move to the side, the camera would follow them through AI, which I think is actually pretty cool. But I don't know how well that would work in practice.
Yeah, dude, I feel like they like really hyped that up. They definitely seem super excited about it. And I don't know like how often that's really going to be used, to be honest.
Is it not like an automatic feature? Or do you have to turn it on?
I think it's automatic, actually. I guess what I mean is like, I don't know like how game changing that's going to be, because I have it on the iPad Pro and I never really am like, oh, thank God I have this. Like, it's just like there.
Fair enough. At least what they were explaining when they showed it was students. So that was more so like my use case idea for it. But in the most general sense, yeah, like I feel like for most people with FaceTime, especially, like no one uses FaceTime for school.
That's true too.
It would be a little bit harder on that front. If it worked with Zoom, that I think would be ideal. But otherwise, like, yeah, if you end up just using Zoom calls, like, it's not really going to do you much.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, most school does Google Meet or Zoom calls. What about the other iPad? Because that one is not as exciting of an update, but I feel like it was like needed.
Oh, absolutely. So we have the normal iPad, like the regular iPad, the cheapest one in the lineup. So you get it for $329 for a 64 gig variant, or if you have the education discount for $299. So it's definitely the cheapest and most affordable, and it's still compatible with the first generation Apple Pencil, which is kind of a shame to see. I wish they did really do an update this year. That pencil's great, but they should really move on to the second generation at this point. It's been a couple of years. It's a bit dated, but for the general masses who want to buy an iPad to use the pencil and just to start out with it, this is definitely a good cop for anyone looking. Because they've seen a 40% iPad growth this year in terms of like people buying it, the general iPad has actually got like a decent set of updates to make it more performance-based and a little bit better for anyone who's looking to pick it up. So you're going to get an A13 Bionic chip in there with 20% faster performance in every aspect in comparison to the previous iteration. They love throwing these stats around, eh? Like 3 times faster than the best-selling Chromebook and 6 times faster than the best-selling Android tablet, which is actually very, very skewed. It's a very skewed statistic to give if you think about it.
Because the like best-selling one is obviously not the most flagship one.
Exactly. Because like if you want to compare an iPad to an Android tablet, the only tablet I would consider in any respects to compare it to would be Galaxy Tab S7.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be the only one you can compare it to.
Yeah, because Android is on so many different manufacturers' devices that the most popular is normally like a pretty trash product.
Exactly.
So those are like the main updates that we got yesterday. We got a bunch of updates also to Apple Fitness Plus. I personally do not use Apple Fitness. So, Darsh, you use Apple Fitness?
Okay, so funny story. I got an Apple Watch for Christmas last year. I talked about it on the podcast. If you guys haven't been following since then, I'm not a big Apple Watch user. I like normal analog watches. This is more me, but I do wear it when it comes to going to the gym. When I got it, it came with 3 months free of Apple Fitness Plus, and I didn't want to pay for Apple Fitness Plus after that. So it started the trial and then I canceled it so that it wouldn't charge me afterwards, but it just canceled the entire trial itself. So I never actually got to use it, which was kind of a shame and kind of a bummer. Apple, give me my Apple Fitness trial back, please. I didn't actually get to use it. So here's the thing. It's like, it's their response to Peloton. That's literally what it is. Mm-hmm. And so it's very interesting the way that they've been doing all these updates, because they've been trying to make it easier for you to join in on classes. Or like, I think one of the standout features is the fact that you wear your watch and it connects to the Apple TV, or it connects to your Apple Fitness app, so that you can like track your vitals as you're doing these different activities to see if you're overworking or underworking. And also then I believe if it doesn't already, well then Apple, like, listen to me on this, like, it should also be able to give you like tips. If your heart rate's going to like 160 and you're working out, then you're obviously overdoing it, especially based on like age. If you're in your 20s or like late 20s and you're hitting 160 for your heart rate, odds are is that you're working a little bit too hard, because you're going to hurt yourself. That's strenuous activity. That's something like, at least teenagers, at least if they're in 160, that's okay. If you're in your 20s to 30s and you're hitting 160, it's a little high. It's a little scary. So I feel like that kind of stuff would be really cool if Apple was able to include that, but I don't know if they've actually done that yet.
Yeah. And I think also like we're seeing this push because it is a response to Peloton, but it's also a response to the world that we're living in right now with the pandemic of people not really going to the gym that much and people still wanting like the camaraderie and community of working out with people. Group classes and stuff makes it kind of feel like you're part of something. And I think that's also probably why they've decided to launch this at that time. But I would love to see group workout challenges, because right now they have like 1v1 challenges where like I could challenge you and see who burns more calories in a week. Mm-hmm. But it'd be really cool if you could do like the entire group of people.
That'd be really cool if you're able to do that. So I remember this is a little off topic, but it's very similar. I'll bring it back, I promise. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Apple Hospital. Like they wanted to start creating services around health to eventually build up a hospital. Do you think that Apple Fitness Plus could be an opportunity for them to eventually open up an Apple gym?
I didn't think about that until right, you just said that, but yeah, I could see that. I actually just, you know, it's not out yet. I was just going to say I just made a video, but I am finishing the video right now about why Apple tried to create a hospital. They faced so many issues when they tried to create physical spaces. Logistically, it's very difficult.
Oh yeah.
And with healthcare specifically, there's a lot of red tape and a lot of things that you have to do. But with a gym, there's less. Obviously, there's still the liability of like, if someone gets hurt at your gym, it's a risk reward thing because it's a lot for Apple to take on legally. But on the other hand, like working out is so transformational that if Apple can be the reason why you work out, you'll feel much more of an emotional attachment to Apple if like you go to an Apple gym, because like that's where like you get in better shape and like you stay healthy. So I could see it. I could see them more likely partnering with a gym though.
That would be very cool. I feel like Apple and like Lifetime would go together very well.
Yeah, they're both like really premium brands.
Yeah, very premium brands, but they also like Lifetime is huge in the US. They're like trying to build up a base in Canada now too. And so when they've been doing that, like they're a premium gym almost, but they also have the lower tier models in the States where you can go to like a something that's more competitive with like, I don't know if there's Good Life in the US or not, but lower tier gyms, like it's more competitive. So that could be very, very cool to see. And I wouldn't be surprised to see it at all. Funny enough, actually, I went to the gym for the first time in like a year and a half yesterday.
How was it?
Very interesting. I went early in the morning with my roommates. It was a very interesting experience because I hadn't been back in a gym in a while.
Yeah.
And I'd never been to this gym in specific. And I was just kind of blown away. The COVID requirements was pretty strong. Like you have to keep your mask on pretty much everywhere, except if you're at a machine itself and you have distance from someone else.
Were you excited to be back or did it feel weird to you?
Oh no, I was off the charts excited. I was so ecstatic. Like yeah. I've been using home workout equipment and like dumbbells for so long. I was so excited to actually be able to use like a bench and actually deadlift. Like it was very, very nice to be back, but it was very interesting. And that's why I brought up like the gym thing. Cause I feel like Apple in specific, like if they were to partner with the gym, like, okay, your gym membership's on your watch. You walk in and your watch is like now fully autonomous from your phone.
True.
So boom, you walk in, tap your watch. You're in the gym. Your watch is connected to your headphones, you're listening to music, you're controlling your vitals, you're checking everything on your workouts. And then also each of the machines could probably connect to Apple Fitness. And then you get all of your stats and stuff from there. Like there's so much you could do.
Dude, I think they have that. Like I've been to a gym before that had the integration like that, where you could like pair your watch and it would sync the workout to the treadmill.
It's a treadmill thing, yeah.
This could actually be a really like fascinating video idea.
Yeah.
Genuinely like exploring how Apple could get into the workout space.
That's the thing. Cause like the more that they create wearables and create services to help you get active, the more you're going to want to do it in like real time and real space, especially as like COVID restrictions start opening up in different places around the world. Like if they were ever to do that, that in any country, I feel like it would be quite successful, especially ones that are very Apple dominated. That would be something really cool to see, just based off like how many wearables and stuff they have and accessories they have for working out and how many partnerships they've already created and collaborated with.
I just keep coming back to the quote that Tim Cook said, which is he thinks that Apple's biggest contribution will be in the health industry. And it really does feel like that way, that they're really putting in their time to create the watch for workouts, but also like for health tracking. So time will tell. I'm really excited to see. It is like weird though, how tech is becoming such a big part of our life. Like now it's not only texting and social media, but it's also health data and wearables and stuff like that. And there's another new product that I've been testing out this week that like really wants to be part of your life in terms of your sunglasses. So for anyone that did not see the news, Facebook just came out with their first smart pair of glasses. Mark Zuckerberg said that the end goal is to create AR glasses, but we're still a few years away from that. So this is it in the meantime. And it's basically a collaboration with Ray-Ban on their classic glasses that allows you to have microphones, speakers, and cameras all on your face.
So first and foremost, Luke, can you put in an applause right here? I just want to give Jack an applause. That was an amazing transition. Honestly, fantastic.
Learn from the best. Thank you.
You know what I'd actually really like to see with these glasses? Before we get into like the specifics on it, I would love to see Casey do a video on these. I feel like of all people, Casey should be the one doing a video. He wears Ray-Bans for every single one of his videos. They have the classic style available too. He's a filmmaker. And so having cameras on your face, like I can only imagine what he could do with it.
I can't even imagine what he would have done with it during the vlogging era.
Oh, absolutely. He would have done some next level stuff when it came to like boosted boards or like whenever he's on any type of electronic device. Yeah. For everyone listening who doesn't know what we're talking about, Ray-Ban released like these set of smart sunglasses and actually normal glasses too. You can get one without the tinted lenses so you can wear them as normal glasses in a partnership with Facebook. And honestly, for $300, it's not even that bad in terms of price. Like sunglasses get pretty expensive, so I'm not surprised here. But you have two dual integrated 5-megapixel cameras that let you take photos and up to 30-second videos using the capture button or the hands-free Facebook Assistant voice commands, which is very interesting. And it also has hardwired capture LED lights to let people know when you're taking these. At first glance, first instance, all I'm thinking about is Snapchat spectacles.
They're kind of like that, but I think what held Snapchat spectacles back is that they looked a little bit like too not like traditional sunglasses.
Yeah.
Whereas these really just look like regular sunglasses with, if you notice it, an LED indicator, and they're a little thicker, but when you're wearing them, no one can really tell.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I think that held Snapchat spectacles back is that the content was like for in the platform, whereas with these, you can easily export and upload to other platforms. The other really cool thing about Snapchat spectacles was the aspect ratio thing. It would change the orientation depending on how you put your device because it recorded in like a square, so it would auto crop. Facebook glasses also record in like a square, but it doesn't have like the easy crop option like that. They're similar, but they're also a bit different. But I think, Darsh, like the most interesting thing to me is like what privacy precautions they're putting into place and how these are going to be received by the public, because Facebook has a horrible reputation with privacy. This is like a pretty big privacy grab.
Mm-hmm.
Cameras literally on your face. The three things that Facebook has cited as privacy things is, number one, the record limit, only 30 seconds. So you can't record a long length video of someone. Makes sense for privacy, but also it's kind of a bummer that you can't record for more than 30 seconds at a time. Second thing is the LED indicator. So when you're recording, an LED indicator pops up, but it's very small, so it's easy to miss. Joanna Stern from, I think, New York Times made a video, or Wall Street Journal. She basically was recording a bunch of people and then asked them like, hey, did you know I was recording? They're all like, no, had no idea. And then the third thing is that there's like a physical on off button. So supposedly the glasses stay off unless you physically turn them on, because people are obviously concerned about Facebook recording without them knowing.
It's actually absurd too. Like these glasses are very interesting in the way that they work. They also have like a discrete set of speakers in the back as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's also a mic on the device as well.
There is,
right? So like you can take videos and you could listen to music at the same time. So I feel like there's just a lot going on here where like people will have a lot of mistrust, or there's a lot of antitrust against Facebook at the moment. This is something that's very, very interesting and very, very sketchy, I guess, in a sense. And I'm very excited to see how people respond to it in the market. I plan on picking up a pair. They've been sold out almost everywhere that I've seen. I can't find the ones that I want in store anyway. I might have to buy like an uglier version that I'm not a huge fan of, but that's okay.
Which ones do you want?
I want the blue ones, the blue circles. I can't find them literally anywhere. The only ones I can find are black circles with green lenses. I mean, it isn't the worst thing in the world, but like, I feel like with me, green lenses, it's a little bit of a bummer. Regardless, I'd be excited to see how it goes in terms of like its overall ecosystem, how the app works. That's my biggest thing, because I want to see how the app works in terms of backup.
It's annoying.
Is it backing up to like your Facebook account, or is it backing up to like OneDrive or something? Because I know Facebook has like partnerships with Microsoft.
So supposedly nothing like backs up unless you like physically upload it, or not backs up, but nothing is like sent to Facebook, I think, unless you explicitly upload it. But I just downloaded the app, and the immediate barrier is like, I don't have a Facebook account anymore because I'm not super aligned on some of the stuff on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that and it's kind of hypocritical because I still use Instagram and they own Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But you have to have a Facebook account in order to like log in. Like you need to log in with a Facebook account, which is like super annoying to me. And I understand it's a Facebook product, but it would be really nice if you did not have to log in with Facebook. Like if you had the option between Instagram and Facebook, because I'm now going to have to create like a straight up fake Facebook account in order to use these.
That's also a big thing. Like I feel like you should have options to make it. Like, I mean, Snapchat did the same thing, but I feel like you should have options to like make an account with like Google or something like that, so that like you don't have to create a Facebook account, because there is a lot of mistrust right now.
Or even Instagram.
Even Instagram, yeah, like Facebook owns it.
Yeah, like log in with Facebook just has a very different connotation than log in with Instagram does to people, in my opinion. Like I was talking to a friend yesterday who was saying like if they called these the Instagram story glasses instead of the Facebook story glasses, he thought they would sell better. Like I just think people our age are much more trusting of Instagram, even though it's like actually the same company.
Exactly. But it's also interesting too, because like I'd look at this as a cool opportunity to take really cool stories. And for Instagram, I would never post a story on Facebook. I've never done it and I never will. It was a stretch for them to bring stories to Facebook in the first place.
Yeah.
But Facebook having stories on Instagram, like Instagram took over for Snapchat. Like Snapchat stories aren't as popular anymore as Instagram stories. I don't watch them half as much. It's a little in terms of that for me, but I would love to see it work. I hope it works with Instagram. That would be great.
I think it does work with Instagram. It's just like the naming scheme is different and like you have to log in via Facebook, but yeah, we will see. And I'm excited to just keep reviewing it. It's obviously not as exciting as AR. I saw that Xiaomi came out with some really interesting AR glasses. So
yeah,
we'll definitely have to talk about that in the next episode, but just to quickly transition us into the stuff we like this week segment of the podcast. We didn't want to miss this week. I know this has been a jam-packed episode. Let's talk about it.
So my first stuff I like this week is actually Lucifer. I've been a huge fan of Lucifer since the third season. I binged it all in like a week when I first watched it because I love the show. I thought it was really interesting commentary on like, don't cancel me, but like religion. I thought that it was very interesting the way they looked about it because it's very much based around God and Lucifer being like the devil who's come to earth. So I always thought that was a really interesting premise to follow. It's also based off of a DC comic, which makes it even funnier because like, I didn't think DC went that kind of deep. And there was a lot of very interesting conversation about religion and about like culture and history that I thought was genuinely really interesting. I always like the show. If you're a huge fan of Lucifer, Lucifer season 6 is dropped and I've been binging it the past like couple of days. So highly recommend it if you guys want to go check it out. It's a fantastic show.
That's an awesome recommendation. I have not watched the show, but I've seen breakdowns of the character on the show. YouTube, like it's just come my recommended. So
yeah,
we'll have to check out the show. My first one for this week is a song. It's called Skinny Dipping. It's by Sabrina Carpenter, who was in the news a lot like earlier in this year for like driver's license and stuff. Obviously people just love drama, but she's actually a really talented musician. So songwriting and stuff was really good in it. I've been like, it's on repeat for me.
That's fantastic. I definitely have to check it out. Speaking of songs, I do have one. It was actually in Outer Banks, and I was looking for like, my buddy gave me a recommendation for an artist who does really good jazz music or like lo-fi kind of jazz. And it's a little bit more like pop rocky a little bit, I guess. But anyway, the song's called Texas Sun. I don't even know how to pronounce the name. I think it's Kruangbin and Leon Bridges. I love Leon Bridges.
Oh my God, me too.
Fantastic song. Highly recommend it. It's very chill and very laid back. It's something that I've really enjoyed listening to. So check it out, guys. Texas Sun. Just Leon Bridges and the first name starts with K. I really don't want to butcher it. I feel so bad.
I will have to check that out. Last one for this week is a video by Mr. Who's the Boss. His last video right before the new one called How Tech Companies Manipulate the Media. I thought it was a really interesting analysis of like dual embargoes and how different tech companies can leverage access to getting a more positive review unintentionally. Like the reviewer isn't purposely trying to do a positive review, but limitations on what they're allowed to talk about can lead to a more positive review than if they were allowed to talk about everything.
Absolutely. That's actually a really good, really, really good choice for stuff we like this week. I really like that one. I actually haven't seen it, but I definitely need to watch it.
For sure. You should definitely check it out. It's a collaboration with Marquez.
Oh, nice. So my last one for this week is Roxanne by The Police. It's a song. It's a really old song. I've been rewatching the show Community. I mentioned it last week and it was in one of the episodes and I started listening to it like on its own. And I thought it was a really fantastic song. So I want to recommend it to all of you this week. And while I am recommending that to all of you this week, I do also want to recommend one more thing. And that's you guys go down below and make sure to hit that subscribe button on both Spotify and Apple Podcasts to make sure you guys get notified for every episode that we do. And on top of that, just make sure to drop a rating as well on Apple Podcasts. Help us hit that goal of 150 ratings. If you stuck through the episode this far, congratulations. Thank you so much for listening. Jacqueline's mic just cut out, so I'm just going to finish up a little bit over here. Huge thank you to Adil Constantine for our amazing intro and outro music, as well as Luke Fabricatori for our amazing edits. And with it all being said, thank you guys so much for watching. I really do hope that you guys did enjoy. Make sure to check out all of Jacqueline and my socials linked down below, and we'll catch you guys next week at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. See ya.